I'm going to have us share the Christmas story and read it together from the Gospel of Luke. This is the second chapter, which is the story of the birth, but also the story of finally Mary and Joseph getting to Bethlehem. Let us share together. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Town, Nazareth in Galilee, to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house of the family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place in the guest room. We've got some news in our family. My youngest son, Wes, who is about to be married to Madison, they are expecting a child. Now, at first it was just a child, but now we have learned they're having twins. So we're very excited. I mean, yes, you could cheer that on. I must say, we're kind of excited. Sometimes I'll just stop in the middle of a road and go and start laughing because I can't believe it's happening. But we're also a little overwhelmed by twins coming. That's a different thing. We've never had multiples in our family. So Madison has been doing her diligent, preparing as a mother for these twins. And she's been basically gathering free stuff, and people have been giving her stuff. And she's brought it to our house, and here's some of the stuff we've had to make room for. That's just a little bit of it. And she says, we still got quite a bit more. So much of our time here lately has been making room. And you know, I have to say, it's kind of fun to make room for a child, right? If you remember maybe doing that in your life, or if you can imagine that, there's an excitement about having a child, but it's also a lot of work. And it's not just physical work, it's preparing your heart, it's spiritual work, making room for a child to come in, softening up your heart again to remember what it's like to hold one of those or two at once. I'm not sure how it's going to happen. And I want to talk about that today, that journey that all of us are called to do, to make room for others, for vulnerable people in our lives. There's nothing more vulnerable than a child, but we know there are a lot of vulnerable people in our world. And I'm inspired to make room. I find that the Christmas season especially is calling us to find that place in our heart that can make room for someone else. And we see it in the Christmas story. We see it in this story of Mary and Joseph coming to Bethlehem, and their family, even though they were packed to the gills because of the census, the whole house was packed, they found room enough for Mary and Joseph. And Mary and Joseph was able to have that baby in a safe, warm place because of the heart, the make room heart that their Joseph's family had. And so it reminded me in my life of a road trip I once took with our family. My family, as you know, is a large family. There are 10 of us. And here's a photo. This is all of us traveling, and everybody wonders, was it a Volkswagen Bug or a Volkswagen Bus? It's a Bug, folks, and there were 10 of us, and they were this big. This was all of us. That's my mother way over on the on the right there saying, where did I get all these? But there we are, right? My dad's taking the photo. On this trip, however, we were going on Thanksgiving from Rapid City, South Dakota, and we were going to travel to Chicago, where one of my aunts and uncles lived, and we loved going to see them. But it was a Thanksgiving trip, right? And We did not have a Volkswagen Bug at that time. My dad had gotten tired of Volkswagen Bugs. And so we actually had two cars. The college kids all drove, I think they might have been in a Volkswagen Bug. They drove from the town of Mitchell, South Dakota. They drove to my uncle's house in Evanston, Illinois. And then we drove in a Pontiac. And boy, Dad really loved this car. I think he loved it because it didn't have a muffler and it sounded really loud and he could hear it. He had kind of hard of hearing. And it had, I remember, a 3-speed on the column, if anybody can remember what that's like, but it's not, the stick shift was not down here, but up here. And I remember that it was a 3-speed on the column because oftentimes the linkage would break and it wouldn't work. And so you had to put the clutch in, turn the car off, and then you had to open up the engine hood and try to find the linkage and try to figure out how to get that thing working again. It was a little bit frustrating. But anyway, we took off, and South Dakota, Thanksgiving, that's usually when the first winter storm appears. So we get to Chicago fine, both cars, and we're doing great. The college kids head home early because we realize the weather's not going to be so good, but we stick it out. We've got the Pontiac, right? So we're in the Pontiac, and we're coming back home, and we're getting right about Iowa, middle of Iowa, and the windshield wipers on this Pontiac start going slower and slower and slower. And Dad looks down on the dash and the alternator. Remember what those are? Anybody know what an alternator is? Anyway, that light was on and it was snowing. I mean, it had just started coming down. A big, huge, beautiful flakes of snow were coming down. And we started to go slower and slower. But we finally got to this Shell gas station. And I just want to say about Shell gas stations, my dad refused ever again to go to a Shell gas station after this experience. So we pulled up to the Shell gas station, and Dad said, I think my alternator's bad. Do you think you can repair it? Do you think you have the ability to do that? And they said, yeah, we have the ability, but we're not going to do it. And Dad said, what? Why not? I've got like 8 kids. I've got to go preach on Sunday. This is Saturday. We got to get home. And they said, well, because the weather's so bad, we don't want you out on that road. And so Dad was a little bit mad at the Shell station. So then we, all 10, or well, it was about 5 of us actually in that car, we went to a restaurant. Now listen, my mom and dad weren't exactly heavy in the money. And so we had filled the car up thinking we could probably get home with that gas money. So they had another $10 bill just in case we needed something. But they were not about to buy anything in that restaurant. Have you ever gone into a restaurant and sat and just had water? It's not a very comfortable experience. I mean, I was so embarrassed. We were sitting there, and the waitress would come by and say, would you guys like to order? And my mother would say, no, water's good, water's good. And then she kind of realized what was going on. But the owner also realized what was going on. He knew that we weren't going to buy anything, and he wanted us out of there. And so back in the kitchen, we could hear this owner yelling at the waitress, saying, get rid of these guys. They're just leeches. We don't want them here. We need space for other people who can actually buy something. But this waitress, I just loved her for it. She would not kick us out. And sometimes, couple times during that night as we kind of waited for Dad to try to figure out what to do, she snuck us some French fries. And so we got these big piles of French fries, and she said, just don't tell anybody. And so she made room for us. And she also fought for us because that owner did not want us there. She made room for us. I'll never forget that about her. And then, about 3 hours later, my dad had somehow found a trucker who was willing to fix our Pontiac. And so this old trucker, who smelled a little bit like he'd been at a poker match all night, he had alcohol on his breath, and he was smoking this huge cigar, right? I wasn't used to cigars, but he had us all pile into the front of his car, or truck, long, big truck, And we were all piled in there, and he pulled our Pontiac to his little truck area where he was, and he put on a couple logs on the stove, and we all cuddled around that stove, and he worked on that car 2-3 hours. And I still remember it because Dad was a little concerned because he kept smoking that cigar while he was fixing the car. And Dad thought maybe it was going to blow up. You know, he was worried about that. And he swore. The dude just had a mouth on him, right? I mean, the F-bomb, every other word. I mean, and Dad didn't know what to think about that, you know. But he was helping us, right? And so he worked on that for 3 hours and finally got it going. And afterwards, my dad came up to him and said, you know, I don't have any cash to give you, but I could write you a check. But could you just promise me to hold it for a week until I get paid? Can you imagine him taking that check? Anyway, he did. He took the check. And by the way, never cashed it. Never cashed it. And on the way we went. And we made it home just in time to not even make it to the house, but we pulled up to the church, and we had church that morning, and Dad preached his sermon, and we were all probably smelling a little rough, but I was so thankful for the way God provided for us through human beings, right? God has a way of working through human beings to help us along that journey, you know, without that waitress, and without that, you know, that cigar-smoking, whiskey-smelling mechanic trucker, we would not have made it home. And that has always stuck with me. It's so hard for me ever to see somebody on the side of the road and not stop, because somebody has stopped for me. I thought about that as we go through this flood. And you see, folks, you know, I really sometimes get really frustrated with how some people put on the internet or on Facebook their videos, and they use AI to make it, you know, look worse or make it kind of funny, this whole experience of being a flood. It is not funny. People are going through terrible times. Some of them have lost family members. Some of them have lost their home and don't know if they're going to make it back. And it just makes me feel with all my heart, it makes me feel like I need to be a Christmas person at this moment. I need to be a cleft in the rock for people who are going through the worst of times. Bear Creek needs to be that. And so I think Christmas time is always a time to explore. Do we have room in our hearts for the most vulnerable around us? We sing this beautiful hymn. It's not a Christmas hymn, but it's a hymn we often sing. Rock of ages, cleft for me, may I hide myself in thee. Well, that song was written when somebody was on a boat on the ocean. And it was a big storm came up and pushed his boat up against a huge wall of rock. And he didn't think he was going to make it. But he looked up on that wall of rock and he saw there a little cave, a little spot, a little what they call a cleft. A little cleft, like a cleft palate, right? I mean, just a little cleft. And he climbed up there and he was able to weather the storm. I believe at Christmas time, and all of us are called to be Christmas all year, that we're called to be that cleft. This church, think about it, is a cleft for people, a safe place, a sanctuary. And I think we are not only called to be the church here, but wherever we go, we can have a soft place in our hearts for others. And I think if there's anything that Christmas calls us to do right now and be, it's to be that cleft, that sanctuary for others. Maybe it's just calling somebody out that you're thinking about in this storm, in this flood, and just asking them how they're doing. That's a cleft. That's an offer. That's a place where they will find safety in that question. And so, we call you to that this Christmas. It's not just a good feeling that we have at Christmas. It is that good feeling, that cleft that God makes in Christ. But it's also a call to be that in the world. And all the people said, amen. I'm going to invite our choir to come forward. And our choir has invited a guest to sing with us. And her name is Emerson. She's going to help us with this song. And you all are going to be invited to sing as well. So we're going to sing Night of Silence. And then Emerson and Cindy are going to sing Silent Night while we're singing. And the second time through, after Emerson and Cindy sing it once, we're going to invite all of you to join us in Silent Night.